July 20, 2021, it's the Watch for Pedro show. Show. Happy Tuesday. Start off with John Coltrane live on Ralph J. Gleason's Jazz Casual 1963 Alabama with his classic quartet. And then a new radio springing forth from inside the light. This is KG Hino, Jim O'Rourke, and Arn Mbarchi. Did I pronounce that right, brother?
You did. You did. You got it.
Okay, people, you can tell I'm not totally man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Brother Arn Mbarchi all the way from Berlin. Welcome aboard.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we both are going to give big credit to Del Andrea for making the connect. Andrea Belfi, incredible drummer man. original drummer Manuel Senor de Mina. I got to
play
with him many years, yeah. And, I mean, this trio here seems very interesting. But, this is more up to date. I want to go back in your journey, or if you would, please bring your earliest musical memory. Remember, it's a Watch for Pedro show, so there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you play Coltrane because, you know, I was like, when I was like 7 or 8, I was a complete Hendrix freak. And I was a budding drummer and I wanted to find out about Mitch Mitchell and who he was listening to. And I found out someone told me that he listened to Elvin Jones.
Well, there's a famous quote that Jimmy, he's talking about Mitch Mitchell. He goes, "He's my Elvin Jones."
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think a lot of those guys, right, because England guys, they're learning rock and roll through the blues. But but there's another road, too, and I think that's Ginger Baker with jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mitch Mitchell, of course, everybody had to learn the blues and all that, but maybe more than Charlie Watts and stuff. He picked up Bill Ward, too. You can hear in the early Black Sabbath how they're
for sure.
Right, that swinging stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, the blues is the preacher, but I don't know. Maybe the jazz is the teacher.
Yeah.
To fuck with James Blunt all of a sudden.
Exactly.
So you're conscious of Jimmy when you're 7 or 8. That's pretty bitching.
Yeah, I was super into that, like obsessive actually. And then someone told me about Elvin Jones, and I was probably about 12 or 13 at that point. And then I read a biography on Hendrix that he was listening to these people, John Coltrane, Ornette Coleman. And I was like, okay, what's that all about? So I went into a record store and I asked someone after school and I said, "Do you have anything with Elvin Jones?" You know, and they said, "Oh yeah, go to the John Coltrane section." I was like, "What? So Elvin Jones worked with John Coltrane? Holy shit!" You know, and with my lunch money, I picked up the Coltrane album on Impulse from '62, I think, and another thing called Bye Bye Blackbird, which is like a live thing of the quartet from Europe. And I brought that home, and it completely transformed everything for me. I became absolutely obsessed, and I had this huge Rolling Stones collection of like bootlegs and everything, every possible permutation of every record. And me and my friends carried them all to the secondhand record store, like, and I sold them all for as many Impulse records as I could buy. So, like, yeah, 14, 15, I was just totally inundated with that whole sort of spiritual jazz thing.
In what town?
That was huge. In Sydney, Australia.
Oh, okay, the big town. Okay. We had a great cat from there on last month, Lucas Sabella. I've been playing his shit out of his music.
Oh, he's an old friend of mine.
Is he?
He's an old friend of mine.
Man,
yeah,
is
totally.
He an incredible composer, performer. I mean, it is just wild. I love his stuff. But, okay, let's go back before even these things. This pad, you grew up in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Was there instruments?
Yeah, this is interesting. My grandfather had this really sort of weird secondhand store with like lots of used junk and all kinds of stuff. And he, including records too, but I could go there and he really spoilt me and I could just grab shit. So he had effect pedals and reel-to-reel machines and sort of shitty guitars and things like that. And he would let me take them home and mess around with stuff. So that was really, really fortuitous. I could just grab anything and mess around. And lots of great stuff happened
as a
result.
Was he a player? Or was there people in your family that played music?
There were players. Not on that side of the family. That was my dad's side. But he was like way, way into music. And there was always music on all the time. My mum's side, there were some relatives. I had some cousins that ran a recording studio. Years later, they recorded like bands like Midnight Oil and In Excess and stuff. But that was like much later. Yeah. So there was music around for
Well,
sure.
Well, let me ask you this. What about at school? Were you in like, you know, I don't know exactly. I heard you got to wear a hat because the sun, there's a hole in the ozone. I don't really know the music program. So like, were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
You know something? Unfortunately, I had no options at school to do music stuff. Like there was no lessons at all. There was some instruments there. So we used to play a lot at school, but there was no music lessons. So all of my music was just from listening to records. That's how I worked out.
Okay. Stuff. And you said something about the, you know, extensive Rolling Stone collection, but what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Well, my mom used to buy me records when I was a baby.
Ah, but when it's your own money, right? When
with
you're
my
a kid,
own
you ain't
money,
got
let
much,
me think.
Right? So it's like, it's got to count.
Let me think about that.
That's
I would
okay.
say a Hendrix, probably a Hendrix bootleg
okay.
or something.
And what about the first gig you went and saw?
Kiss.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Kiss in like 79, 80, I think.
Yeah, we saw them before they had an album out. They opened up for anybody here. Nitty Gritty
right.
Dirt Band, Savoy Brown, Wishbone Ash.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, and then, you know, I remember when the record came out, it was really slow. It was nothing like the gigs that we saw them at, right?
Okay, okay.
Right. But I have some – in fact, I learned some bass tricks from Gene Simmons. I learned the gliss more from him than I did from John Entwistle, which is kind of crazy.
That's interesting.
Jack Bruce is the guy I really owe, though, man. He really helped me big time. I love that.
Yeah,
man.
I can hear that.
Love that, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so – Not after school, like graduating, but after school in the afternoon. Did you get into the bedroom band, the basement band, garage band?
Absolutely. Any opportunity I had to do that, I was doing it. Absolutely.
Now you said something about drums. What do you think? You know, there is on YouTube.com, like a half-hour documentary called It's called Different Drummer. It's about Elvin Jones.
Dude, I watched that three nights ago.
Okay, with the colors, right? He's talking about...
Yep.
And how he composed... I used to
have
that on VHS
when I was young.
Okay, the VHS, right? He shows you how he composed Three Card Monte and kind of mixed in
amazing.
Rhythm with... poly meaning many and rhythm meaning rhythm.
Yeah.
But it's so beautiful, you know. And also, right, he's got Thad Jones, Hank Jones, he's got his brothers, his daddy's a preacher.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know what I mean? But at the same time, very humble man.
Absolutely.
And
beautiful.
He said the big problem
was
people didn't think he could hold time.
Yeah.
And Ron Carter gives this big spiel about it, how there's drumming before him and drumming after him. And how he changed things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. He totally opened things up. For sure.
And I think a big dealio about that was John Coltrane asking him to play with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Coltrane had a few other people that he tried out before Elvin, but then, that was it.
Okay, so these bands that you did with your buddies from school, what was the material? Like me and D Boone, when we were boys, we copied, because everybody else did, copied off records and terrible, right?
Yep.
So, like, no original material.
That's how you learn. That's how you learn, though. Like,
people on the show, Arne, you wouldn't believe it. Cats that started writing music, right? Because things changed. Cats who started playing in the 80s and 90s, I think it was different. I think 70s is more about, copying and shit.
Totally. We used to do that too, of course. Like, but it was interesting because in those days, I didn't know the difference between, you know, the Sex Pistols and Pink Floyd and you know, 70s rock and all the punk stuff that was happening. To me, it was all the same.
All
you know,
rock and roll, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't have any really reference points for what was what. So
the genre names, right? The genre, the labels, the tags.
Exactly. Yeah, and I loved, you know, I loved the Beatles as much as I loved, you know, like the Sex Pistols or whatever. So
fucking music's music, art's art, right?
Exactly.
Can I ask you that? Was this just practice band, or did you guys ever do any gigs?
We did some stuff, like, at school and stuff like that, like some concerts at school. But my first My first live experience was playing drums in free jazz, like when I was 17. Or so. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to ask you exactly what got you on the drums.
I don't know. I just started banging shit, and it just
well,
made
you
me,
know, Elvin, you know. In that doc, he says he started on his ma's pots and pans.
Yeah.
Did you do
very
that?
Similar.
Okay.
I did.
And his sister helped him with the paper route, right, with his paper route so they could get the money up to buy it, a kit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I was super interested in rhythm, but I was also really interested in electronics and weird noises and stuff like that. And because my grandfather had all these sort of reel-to-reel machines and effect pedals and stuff, I used to muck around with that as well. So I had this sort of dual interest of playing drums and also just making weird feedback stuff and with whatever I could use. So those two things mixed together.
I'm thinking about 70s AM radio, drum solo and synthesizer sounds. Edgar Winter group, Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also shortwave radio.
Do you remember Frankenstein?
Absolutely.
You know why it's called that?
No.
Because it's 45 minutes long, and they chopped it up to make an AM single out of it with a drum solo.
Fantastic. Amazing.
Yeah. So that thing is all razor-bladed together, because in those days, right, no Pro Tools.
I love it.
Right. So I want to play this piece you gave me, Sagittarian Domain.
Cool.
What is Sag? I'm on the last day before Cap.
You are. Thank you.
Swat for Pedro show. Only one tune, people, because it's a big enchilada. Sagittarius domain. And get this, people. It's an excerpt. You didn't really get the whole enchilada. You got like half of it. Or an ambachi. God, I'm going to get that right one of these days. Okay. Like, isn't that trippy when you don't know? There's a certain kind of purity to it, right? Before you're all fouled and polluted with semantics. Okay, so, but you are attracted, and like you said, your grandpa's this thrift store, and there's electronic stuff, right?
Yep.
So this is kind of your first step. Your first electronic stuff is in a Boogala synthesizer, right?
No, hell no. I had like a, no, really, really primitive stuff. Like I had a double tape recorder and I used to kind of record, do these overdubs by plugging a microphone into the jack of the double tape recorder and bouncing, you know, bouncing and bouncing until you had all this stuff,
yeah.
Which sounded like
a little bit of music to go, a little bit of music to go along with the hiss.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you like some music with that hiss? Nah, just some hiss. Okay. No. You know, Lou Barlow on that fucking Dinosaur record with Polito, right? I think it's like 50 like bounces back and forth, he was telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one way to be a one-man band. Thank you, Mr.
Yeah,
Les Paul.
Yeah, you learn so much. Yeah. You learn so much from doing that. Like, I learned how to flange by playing two tapes at the same time.
Oh, right, because that was the original way to do it, was with tape.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. But it was a really, really good way to just experiment and learn. Yeah.
Sure. And what about, let's get back on the analog world here, your first drum set.
It was a Pearl drum kit.
Like Kiss, like Peter Criss.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
But something,
now we know what this is all about.
My father actually found, one day I walked into my bedroom and there was a snare drum in a road case. Yeah. And I looked at it and I was like, holy shit. And my dad was smiling and it was Phil Rudd's snare drum from
AC/DC.
Oh,
wow. Yeah.
Yeah, my dad found somewhere. I don't know how. I still have it.
Yeah, I came on to that. Well, didn't he get into some trouble and stuff, right?
He did.
Yeah, he was in New Zealand for a little bit, right?
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, there's some slamming beats he's got on some of them records. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Really econo. Oh, yeah. Really econo, but where it counts, you know. He reminded me of Scott Krause in Pere Ubu. He reminded me of that kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something about the feel of AC/DC that's so Australian and just, yeah, super minimal, but really kind of difficult to play that way.
Oh, yeah,
that
that's
way.
Right.
Yeah, the feel.
You know, Ramones, when I had, Joey's brother asked me and Clem to get with Cheetah and do the first album on his 40th anniversary, and that was tough. That's not really blues-based stuff. It's more like pop or a lot of downstrokes.
Yep.
So, with this Pearl drum set, I mean, right away, did you start augmenting it with like a hybrid, like bringing in electronics or crazy percussion, ashtray, shit like this?
Much later. When I was about 18, 19, I had like a sort of guitar that was broken, and I would put that on the floor tom and hit it with a drumstick, and I had a reel-to-reel machine that would sort of do all this sort of delay stuff and stuff like that a little bit later. Yeah.
Now, when you did that free jazz gig, the cats you were playing with, were they older?
Yeah, there was one guy who was this sax player who was the first sax player to play free jazz in Australia. And
wow.
I saw him in the 70s, and I saw him playing with Dewey Redman. And the next day, I bumped into him somewhere, and I said, hey, I loved that show. And he just said, oh, wow, what are you doing? And I said, nothing. And he said, do you want to play? So he just came into my room and we just blasted for 3-4 hours.
Wow.
And he was a lot older than me. And
his name, Warren?
Eddie Brunson.
Eddie Brunson. Wow. What a generous man. What a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And big age difference, right? Of course.
There was.
But
why don't we
have more of that? The mentor sensei thing, you know?
I agree.
Protege is the connect between the generations. See, this is why
absolutely.
I hate the idea of this genre shit, because I think it segregates us.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for older generations helping me, like, all the time and just, yeah, being super generous. And it's super important.
Well, I'm so glad you got that experience. And you were still a teenager, right?
I was, yeah, yeah.
Wow. So thank you, Mr. Eddie. Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, you never know, right? Your whole life turns around.
It's true.
From Kiss and AC/DC to free jazz. But, you know, yeah, music is music, and it's a language, right, that can jump fucking barbed wire and shit, razor wire. We're at the end of the first hour, July 20, 2021. This is Joao Pedro Show special guest, Oren Ambarchi. We'll talk about it, too. July 20, 2021. It's the second hour of the Joao Pedro Show. Pedro show starts second hour off with it ain't humid, but it sure is hot. Orem Ambarchi. And then Bombas Prendon, Broken Window from their new collection. Going to their archive, Steve. These cats, 42 years, maybe 8,000 recordings, 5-6 gigs.
Yep.
Obviously a love, a labor of love. And then Orem Ambarchi with Simeon Angel. Okay, so since you didn't do music in school, did you pursue music in higher education?
No. Okay. It's all just from playing gigs and listening to records. Yeah.
Okay, so then what happens after, well, obviously you're talking to me from Berlin, so you must have left Sydney.
You know, when I was 18, soon after finishing school, I went straight to New York because I wanted to see all this stuff that I was listening to on vinyl.
Yeah.
So that's what I did immediately. And I kind of lived in New York for 3 or 4 years in my late teens, early 20s, just going to as many gigs as possible, buying as many records as possible, and speaking to people and just, yeah.
Did you have a drum set? Were you playing music?
I actually bought a drum set at one point, yeah, yeah. I don't know where I put it.
I've always wondered about musicians in New York City. Oh, my God. Like, shit's got to be there existing at the Prac Pad or the club because getting it on the fucking train, man.
Yeah, yeah. These dudes that I knew, they let me leave it in their apartment, and we used to play there. And sometimes we'd play on the street and, you know, yeah. But most of the time I was going to shows.
Okay. Yep. And that's one thing about New York City, buttload of shows, man.
Especially in the late 80s, early 90s. Like, I was really lucky to see amazing shit. Yeah.
That's kind of the John Zorn Lower East Side thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I hooked up with those people. They really, really helped me a lot, actually. Yeah, I was just this kid from Australia, and a lot of them, you know, I played with a lot of those people and eventually released stuff on Zorn's label. And, yeah, he was very generous to me. And very encouraging.
Did you search him out? You went to his gigs? What was he having? Was it the Tonic at that time or the Stone?
No, it's before Tonic. It's the old Knitting Factory.
Oh, the Shitting Factory on Houston? Or
yep,
Leonard?
Yep.
I saw Houston. William Partner on the house. Oh, man, that place could get sweaty.
Yeah. I played there a lot.
Oh, man, that place could. But you know what? In some ways, I dug it more than the Leonard one.
Oh, yeah, me too. Me too, for sure. But I used to go to...
So what was it like? Like, you go to the gigs and, hey, can I play with you?
No. Okay. I used to go to gigs and just go to all the bloody... I was like the nerd in the front at all the gigs, you know? And then one day, a few people that were there were like, dude, you're at these gigs every night. Like, you should meet Zorn, you know? So they just took me upstairs to the dressing room, and I met him, and we just totally got along and spoke about music and... I went back to Australia, and then 6 months later, he faxed me because that was the way we communicated then. And he faxed me and he invited me to play at his festival. And I came back to New York and did that. And yeah, one thing led to another.
Well, when you came to play, you mean Man Alone solo?
I played with another Aussie drummer friend of mine that I grew up with, and we both played together with a bass player that was a Japanese bass player from New York. And the funny thing is that Zorn invited me, and he'd never heard anything that I'd done before, and he invited me to play at his festival. That's which is completely insane. Yeah, amazing.
Well, he might, you know, look, he's around a lot of music cats, so if he senses something, maybe mm-hmm. he's got some kind of shorthand. Yeah, you know what I mean? A bullshit detector or something. And maybe. If he didn't trip that off, he said, well, might as well give him a shot.
Yeah. And it was just, that really changed my life, that gesture.
You know, and now the next song I want to play has got the worst title, what we just talked about, Hubris. This is totally opposite of hubris, right?
It is the opposite of hubris, exactly.
SWAT for Pedro show, Hubris 3. So I guess there's two other versions of Hubris.
Yeah, that's
Lauren Ambachi. And then Head Boggle after that with D. You want to talk about titles, okay. D2 minus M plus BB minus N. You know, of course. What else are you going to do with an instrumental? Okay. So, okay. After getting this fucking righteous opportunity to come do this festival of Mr. Zorn, you go right back to Australia or what?
Yeah, not right back, but when I went back, I had a lot of energy and inspiration. So, yeah, a lot of stuff sort of started happening there. And me and my friend organized a music festival, which we did for 10 years and brought all these people to Australia. And we just were super fired up by that experience. And we would also went to Japan and go to New York and play shows. And we're in Japan and we worked with a lot of Japanese noise musicians, and just a lot of stuff started happening at that point.
Were you ever on the West Coast here?
Not as much.
Okay.
Yeah, much later in life, yes.
Okay.
Because, not at the time.
You know, the city, San Francisco and stuff, that very creative experimental scene. And Chicago's got some, right? You know?
But New York
is the big daddy.
At the time it was, yeah. But I was, you know, really love going to the West Coast, actually, and playing. I'm glad that I do that now.
Well, you were touring then.
Yeah, yeah.
And what kind of units? Were you part of bands, or was it one-man show, or you with
kind
your
of bands,
drummer buddy?
We had a band called Phlegm, which was kind of like a sort of noisy, experimental kind of punk band that we would do. But then we did a lot of improv stuff. And, you know, playing with all kinds of people. Yeah.
What, like the band had like a core member and then other people would join you?
We had three members, but all of us were interested in doing other stuff. So we were always playing with other people and having guests, and not necessarily in that group. Yeah.
It was fluid. Yeah. Fluid. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
And at that time, New York City was a little more econo to live in. Especially for a musician.
Most definitely.
Because nowadays. And then the big city in Europe, econo living wise, ended up Berlin. Is that why you...
Berlin is really recent for me, actually. I was in Italy before that. And
which part?
In Milan.
Okay, north.
Yeah. But
talk about
honest,
humid,
like,
man. Summer there ain't fun.
Oh, yeah. Zanzare.
Zanzare. Oh, yeah, the fucking mosquitoes.
Terrible.
But I got the only town I did 11 gigs, right, last Sonia de Mayo tour there, and only Genoa was an 8. I got 8 in Sardinia. I got 8 in Sicily. I got 8 everywhere. Padua. And they were all different kind of strain, right? So they... I mean, these motherfuckers the next day be size of meatballs. I thought I had tumors in my throat.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That Zappa record, The Man from Utopia, the cover of that record is like from like an Italian show. <with mosquitoes. laughs>
Okay, so in Milano, did you use it like a home base to tour around Europe?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So to be honest, like the last 10 years before COVID, I've mostly been just touring, living out of a suitcase and moving from place to place. Yeah.
And now with a drum set.
No, with guitar.
Okay,
yeah,
So you're not playing as drums as much now?
Only a little bit. Like the trio with Hino and Jim, I play drums. And some of the records that you're playing on the radio, like I play drums on. But yeah, since the age of like 25, I've mostly been playing guitar. Yeah.
And some of that reason's just practicality, like getting shit.
No. I was interested in, you know, like electronics,
Jimmy.
And
also Jimmy,
you know,
right?
Feedback and stuff like that. Yeah. And eventually I just started to focus on guitar.
Instead of just beating it on, sitting on the floor, Tom, and you're beating on the strings.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's
one thing led to another. Yeah.
Almost like a kind of homebrew version of a kalimba. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, July 2021. This Rock Pedro Show special guest, Oren Ambachi. Multi-Power 3. J. July 20, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show start off the third hour with Parchment Where the Sun Don't Shine, Oren and Barchi. Sam Locke Ward featuring Joe Jack Talcum. You might learn to like it. And then finally, Oren and Barchi with Bleeding Shadow. Now, this stuff under your own name, right? But it can end up being anything. It's not like you have to give a name to a different kind of proj. It's just this is you being musical, and you express your whatever, however you see fit at the moment.
Depends on the thing, yeah. Like some of the stuff you play, like Parker Where the Sun Don't Shine, and It Ain't Humid, But It Sure Is Hot, is me. It's this series I have where I call it Stack Karaoke, where I'm playing guitar solos over ZZ Top and AC/DC loops. Just for fun. Because I used to go running and I would listen to music like, you know, ZZ Top or whatever. And a lot of times I would hear a riff and the riff would be so good, but then they would fade out the riff really quickly. So I started looping the riff that I liked and, you know, for an hour or so and just like running.
You know where Billy got a lot of those riffs? Lightning Hopkins.
Yeah, and then eventually.
You know that, right? It's Lightning Hopkins. They would get drunk with him, and he didn't really play. He played acoustic, but he played that rock and roll blues, those kind of things. Yeah, Billy learned all that because he had a band before ZZ, and it sounded like they did a version of Help. It was terrible. Right. Moving Sidewalks. Jimmy loved it. Jimmy had him open for
him. He gave him a guitar.
That's Pearly Gates, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's trippy. So it was the licks. And if you ask me, those licks are very rhythmic. They're very drummer-oriented. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Frank Beard, a really Kano drummer. I got to meet them. The students got to play once with them.
Oh, nice.
For the Prince of Monaco. It was so bizarre.
Whoa.
But they were the nicest cats in the world. Billy, Frank, and then Dusty, man. Dusty, it was like he had 10 thumbs. But he could play a motherfucker. Yeah, little thick things. All three very, very kind, man. Beautiful.
That's great.
Man. Yeah.
Awesome.
So you put this into your headphone, like kind of mantra?
Yeah, exactly. And I just love repetition and just zoning out to this stuff. And yeah.
That's interesting because, you know, I have cats on the show, and sometimes I'm a student. Forever learning, okay? So I'll ask something like, hey, is repetition the enemy of improvised music?
Hell no. I love repetition.
And also the India tradition, right? That's all about the lady plays the one chord thing. It's actually all the chords at once. And then the other guy dances around that, right? So it's like an embracing both elements.
I'm super into it. You know, minimalism and things repeating, and you just hear all this different detail, and you can kind of reveal all this stuff over a long period of time. That's why my tracks are so long.
Yeah.
I like exploring things over a long duration. Yeah.
And so, like, composing, right? Maybe just come up with a tema and see where it leads?
Yeah, it depends on the thing. Like, sometimes I'll do an improvisation and listen to that and then start structuring things and adding things and, taking things away. And,
that's why. Always starting with too much and having to take out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with bass, right? It's not the most notes. It's the right notes.
Exactly.
Because physics, you get the big karma backhand. We end up being so little if you put too many fucking notes in there. I'm going to play this piece is bitching. And I think it's one version, right? Knots? You got a couple versions of this thing?
There's a few versions. Yeah, exactly.
Watford Pedro Show. Last music for this edition, Knots from Orin Ambarchi, who just hit me to the fact that we lost Brother Rick Laird, man. I remember seeing him with the Mahavishnu Orchestra. First time I saw a bass player playing with a volume, I thought he was playing with a wow-wow.
Right.
But, you know, arena rock, right? Even though they had to curtain it off, it was Long Beach Arena. Of course, it was big enough for the draw. And so they had this gigantic curtain. In fact, gave me an idea for a tour device that we called it the anti-cave device. No matter what the draw was of the night, you could, boy, is it crowded in here. You know, just push the curtain, expandable curtain rod that pushes up closer and closer to the stage lift, right?
Nice.
Okay. So, let's get this out of the way. You got a website, which I dig. It's really fucking interesting. And it's got your own name, right? So it's people, orenambarchi.com?
Yep, okay. Exactly.
I just want to make sure. But I spent a lot of time reading on it, and people, there's a lot of good stuff there. And if you want to see or witness somebody thinking out loud about their music, check it out, because it's up there. And, you know, again, like that Mr. Eddie did for you with the sax. When musicians share like that in such a non-like, you know, some agenda or some motive that's jive, that ain't pure music, there's no greater gift.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just something that I actually, as I get older, really, really think about a lot. And there's people that I actually contacted that I hadn't been in touch with for 20, 30 years, just to say thank you, you know, for doing that, because it's amazing, just so generous. And one little thing like that can just completely transform someone's life or just put you on a particular path. So, it's pretty special.
Yeah, and sometimes there's an old aphorism, right? Youth is wasted on the young. So, like, you kind of take that for granted. But then as you get, like you said, I would say a little less younger. Fuck that old word. But, you start realizing, like, God damn, that was happening that happened. That's not just the same old, same old. And you learn to take value in that stuff. Yeah.
For sure.
It's great to hear you talk about that. And what kind of plans you got during this situation? Were you trading files with people? Do you do that stuff?
Yeah. In fact, I'm in the middle of editing a new record right now with a whole bunch of shit. There's a whole lot of files in front of me. So,
Is it kind of like what you've been doing, or is it a departure?
It's a little new. Yeah, it's a little new. It's got a lot of friends playing on it. Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is. I don't even know how to describe it.
Is each tune its own world, or is it one core group that's doing all the tunes?
Dude, it's one tune.
Oh, it's one tune.
It's 40 minutes.
Okay, yeah, I call those operas. I've done three of them. I did a fourth one, but it wasn't my libretto, the fourth one. But you know where I got the fucking idea? Off-air people, I was telling him about Georgie learning off Happy Jack and Spectrum. Happy Jack! There's a song on there called A Quick One While He's Away.
A Quick One.
That's what got me. Like, you know what? I need... It's got to have more parts. I can't tell the whole story with this limited amount of parts. I got to make bigger parts.
Yep.
So that's why I got into that stuff. I'm a Minuteman. I never thought I'd end up doing shit like that.
Sure.
But it ended up being the only way I could really talk about losing D. Boone 25 years ago. I finally got the nerve up, and it was that form that helped me. I could do 15 different parts, you know?
Yep.
Then So, okay. It's one 40-minute song, and all these different people are all part of all 40 minutes of that, or are there episodes or shit?
There's episodes, and some people reappear, and Jim's on it. Jim's playing synth on it.
Oh, wow.
I got him. Julia
I did some gigs Julia where he Reedy would play, his synthesizer was like a little fucking, I don't know, notebook or something. Like the lid was the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the suitcase synth. The EMS.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
But that guy can play anything, man. He could play the radio.
It's true. It's true.
Okay. And so a lot of it's not just musical thing. It's friends, right?
Yeah, everybody's a friend, except there's one dude who I asked to play on it, and he's a pedal steel player from the UK called BJ Cole. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's done a lot of really great 70s records.
I had a guy from England who's now living in Nashville that got into steel. He was on the show a few months ago, but the name...
That's the good thing
about Alzheimer's. You always meet new people. But anyway, you just wanted to play with him because of his musical heritage.
The guy I know from
those days on Slide was Sneaky Pete. I got to meet him at Cherokee up on Fairfax where I was doing my wrestling record. What a fucking amazing cat.
Yeah, lucky. Wow. Yeah, this guy's like the hired gun in the UK in the late 60s, early 70s, all the way till now, actually. He's on loads of records. And he made some really strange solo records as well with people like Danny Thompson and a lot of interesting people in the UK.
Look, when you get this record done, because we're out of fucking time, I'm so sorry, but when you get done, will you come back on the show and let's play it and talk about it?
Absolutely, you know, I'd love to.
Because
instead of
spoiling everything by giving it away, we'll fucking actually play it for people, and you can let all the insights you want out.
Cool. Okay. I got to finish it first.
I know. I'm backed up to fucking December anyway, so you got a little time.
Good.
Arne, it's been such a fucking honor to have you aboard. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thanks so much,
Mike. Big gratitude to fucking Fratello Andrea for making the connect. People, for
really
the July 2021... At this 2021, that's hard to say, people. July 20th, maybe I should do that. Yeah, 20th, 2021. Keep your powder dry.